නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Dear friends in Dhamma, we were discussing Dvaitanupassana Sutta last couple of months actually, and there we understood that vipassana can be streamlined, or we can directed vipassana onto various themes, and accordingly there were 16 themes that Buddha has explained in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta. We can recognize them as certain directions, certain conclusive directions, and maybe we can say after certain amount of practice, the vipassana yogi may come to a certain kind of an understanding, okay. I have to prioritize this path on this particular direction. I have to pay more emphasis on this side. So likewise, there are certain directions, certain aims that we can recognize, and those are the ones we discussed in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta. Today, we are hoping to start a new sutta. So this is actually talking about different ways of abandoning asavas, abandoning influxes. Now, influxes, as you all know, kamasava, bhavasava, avijjasava, and sometimes it includes dittasava also. Kamasava means the influx with respect to the sensual desires. Bhavasava with respect to the continuous existence, continuous becoming. One has kind of an influx, certain tendency available in the mind. And avijjasava, which is the tendency in the ignorance. So we were continuously thinking there is a self here, there is a person, an individual. So these kind of various different kinds of delusions are existing in the mind once it is there for a long, long time. So it has become a habit, it has become influx, avijjasava. So sometimes this is divided into two, avijjasava and the dittasava. Dittasava is actually can be considered as part of avijjasava. So dittasava also emphasize the same attitude where we have certain wrong views. Avijjasava could be little broader, having a kind of compactness view, where there is no compactness, and then there is a kind of a sense of I happening as a result of continuity. So likewise, avijja can be pervaded at various different corners, and avijjasava in that respect is a kind of a broader term. Anyway, there are, in that sense, we can call as four influxes. And sometimes when the dittasava is included into the avijjasava, then we can say only three asavas, three influxes. Now, actually, in this sutta, it is not immediately the question comes how to abandon influxes, but the question will come in the middle. Before that, there is another interesting epithet that the Buddha is using, a kind of a riddle form that Buddha is using in order to overcome lower fetters. As you all know, there are lower fetters, what we call as the Uddhamba Orambhagya Sanyojana. Sakkaya ditthi vichikicca silabbata paramasa kama kamaraga patiga. So that means Sakkaya ditthi, the personality view, silabbata paramasa, thinking that the purification is possible using mere rituals, observances, and as a result of that one may continue adhering to those observances. That is the Sakkaya ditthi, vichikicca, silabbata paramasa, and then the vichikicca is the doubt. So different forms of doubt are possible. Now these three are particularly, we are talking particularly in the abandoning of these three fetters. Sometimes we call as a very important thing in this practice, because then only one becomes a trainee, a seka puggala. A sotapanna, a one who has attained the stream. So basically, this indicates that these three fetters are quite important to understand. On the other hand, the other two fetters, kamaraga and patiga, particularly shows about the sensual desire, and then some sort of friction, some sort of what to say, impingement, a certain amount of hindrance available in the mind, and that is what ultimately manifests as hate. So those we'll discuss slowly as we are going through the suttas, and now we'll get into the sutta. At one occasion, Buddha was dwelling in Savatthi, and there Buddha makes a kind of an inspired utterance. Usually inspired utterances are included as a separate a book called Udana. In the Kuddaka Nikaya, there are several books. In that collection of books, Udana is one interesting book where all the different kinds of Buddha's inspired utterances are included. Now here in this Udana Sutta is not included in the what we call the Udana, the inspired utterances, that book in the Kuddaka Nikaya. Instead, it is included in the Samyutta Nikaya. Samyutta Nikaya, Khanda Samyutta, where all the different kinds of suttas dealing with the aggregates are very much organized. So there are also this inspired utterances included, and we'll see whether it is available at other places. Of course, it is available in other places as well. And now this, in this particular time, Buddha is making a inspired utterance. No chassang no cha me siya na bhavissa na me bhavissa titi. Evang adimucchamano bhikkhu chindeya oram bhagyani sangyojananiti. So he is telling no chassang no cha me siya na bhavissa na me bhavissa titi. Now this is a kind of a phrase that Buddha is referring, and he say if one is able to abide by this sort of epithet, this sort of phrase, or we can say this sort of an idea, a way of practice, then he would be able to overcome the lower fetters, five lower fetters. So then we need to find out what is this particular statement means. So this is very much like a riddle, by the way. And certain suttas are there, particularly Buddha say, okay, this is a wrong view. But there is a very slight difference in that statement when he is talking about it as a wrong view. But here Buddha is talking, it has something very interesting, something very important. So there's a fair amount of information available about this phrase in Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, particularly to this Udana Sutta, available in the Samyutta Nikaya, where he has gone through many sources and commentaries and trying to find out what exactly this phrase means. Because this is a little problematic kind of a statement, where Buddha mentioned no chassang no cha me siya na bhavissa na me bhavissanti iti na me bhavissati iti. Now Bhikkhu Bodhi translate it like this: it might not be and it might not be for me, and it will not be and it will not be for me. So this is the riddle, this is the kind of phrase that Buddha is talking. Now here, according to Bhikkhu Bodhi, people who are into the Uccheda Vada, Uccheda Ditti, where they think, okay, this body and the mind completely destroyed after the end of this life, and they are, the person who is existing so far will ultimately vanished, or ultimately cease to exist after death. So what we call as the Uccheda Ditti, annihilationist view. So the annihilationists actually have some similar but little different phrase. They are telling, I might not be and I might not, it might not be for me. I will not be and I will not be for me. It will not be for me. So instead of it, they have the I. I might not be and it might not be for me. I will not be and it will not be for me. So that means with respect to the past, so they think, okay, I haven't been there, and whatever belonging to me also not there, and now after the end of the death I will not be, so I am going to cease. So whoever the person, whoever the individual, the so-called I, going to cease completely without a remainder at the death, and it will not be for me. So the another whatever belonging to me also completely disappear at the death. So this is a kind of an annihilationist view, where they accept that there is a self here, there is a person here, there is I here, and that particular I going to completely cease after the death. Now, instead of that, Buddha mentioned it in a slight different way. It might not be, and it might not be for me. It will not be, and it will not be for me. Some similar phrase, now Buddha little change it and use it as a phrase. Now, it seems like, according to Bhikkhu Bodhi, so he says that this particular phrase, particularly the previous one, where I might not be and I will not be, where the emphasis is given to a self, existing self, is one of the important phrase used by this annihilationist. It seems that it is quite a known phrase throughout the religious circles. Now Buddha changed it, maybe Buddha has corrected it, in a way so that it also can be used by the yogis in a different manner. So instead of I, he simply say it. It might not be and it might not be for me. It will not be and it will not be for me. So what is this it? So this is the information, important thing that we need to now sort out. And when this statement was said, now one bhikkhu in the crowd, he is asking the question. Yata katham panabante no chasang no chamesiya na bhavissa name bhavissati iti evang adimuccha mano bhikkhu chindaiya oram bhagyani sanyojanani iti. So how venerable sir can a bhikkhu resolving thus, it might not be and it might not be for me, it will not be and it will not be for me, cut off the lower fetters? Now he's asking the question, okay, how this is going to happen when this sort of a phrase being used, how the lower fetters could be cut off? Now Buddha is giving the answer. So it is actually here, the it means the five aggregates. So the five aggregates can be terminated. Five aggregates are the problem. Five aggregates, were the things which was available in the past and currently experiencing five aggregates, and if this is going to continue, then the five aggregates are the ones going to continue even in the future. What was available, five aggregates. Currently what is available, also five aggregates. Maybe tomorrow, day after tomorrow, next year, if this body exists, or even future life is going to happen, what is existing is nothing but five aggregates. So five aggregates is what Buddha refers it here as it. And so that is the culprit. So that is the main reason. Other than that, there is no ongoing self or personality, individual, eternal self. But five aggregates are responsible for this whole process. Now, this particular monk, whoever the practitioner, is referring that the five aggregates can be terminated. Now he has some sort of idea about the five aggregates. So he has a certain understanding, now those can be terminated and the world presented by them can be terminated. And I will so strive that the five aggregates will be terminated and so that the world presented by them will be terminated. So the panchakkhanda loka, the aggregates and the loka, the perception of world prepared, presented by the five aggregates, it is what we have to work on now. So let's see why Buddha, in a way, giving that sort of encouragement, that sort of a reflection, and how correct it is. Now, as a result of the question, or as an answer to the question, Buddha is giving an explanation based on Sakkaya Ditti. Idha bhikkhu asutava putujjano ariyanang adasavi ariya dhamme akovido sapurisanang adasavi sapurisa dhamme akovido. So likewise, Buddha, there's a phrase telling, okay, there's an uninstructed worldling who is not seen the noble ones, not associated noble ones, he don't know the dhamma of the noble ones, and he hasn't associated true people, he hasn't seen them, he hasn't has any idea about their dhamma, their practices. So how he regards rupa, the form, as a self. Rupang attato samanupassati, form as self. So that means this body is myself, basically. We already discussed this part sometimes before, but anyway, we'll describe them in a brief manner. Now, rupang attato samanupassati, rupa vantang va attanang, attani va rupang, rupasming va attanang. So this is how it is basically explained. Now, there are four different possibilities of Sakkaya Ditti with respect to each aggregate. Rupang attato samanupassati. Immediately, there's a kind of a coincidence. There's a kind of a resemblance. Okay, this body is myself. Immediately. And rupa vantangva attana. So, this self has the body. So, that means there's a relationship. There's a belongingness. The self possess the rupa. The self possess the material form. That's another way of looking at it. Attaniva rupa. That means self is something large, and in that self, actually, what we call someone is making little noise. Okay. Rupa vantangva attanam. So that means self has possessed of material form. And attaniva rupang. That means material form as in self. Now self is something large. In that large self, rupa, the form, is part of it. And then rupas mingva attanam. So that means self as in material form. So material form is something large. In that large material form, self is very much like included. So, I mean, when we are telling like this, sometimes it's difficult to understand what it exactly means. So if we say how we are typically doing some sort of a statement, say we have languages, we have various ways of communication, and during this communication, how are we relating this? How are we actually supporting this sort of wrong views? Sakkaya Ditti, the personality views. Simply say, for example, you are telling, okay, I am beautiful. I am tall. Or I am sick. I am not well. Now, in this simple statement, so basically we are referring the body. I'm not well. Most probably you are not talking about your mind is not well. Rather, you are referring that your body is not well. You may be tired, you may have a fever, you might have cough or whatever it is, a tummy problem, stomach ache, whatever. So you are saying, okay, I'm not well. So at that level, basically that body is immediately taken as myself. So immediate. And sometimes actually we are simply using the terminology, the language, we might not have a strong kind of a Sakkaya Ditti, but sometimes it comes very profoundly, it comes very strongly in ourselves. It is not a mere statement, rather we strongly adhere to it, we strongly stand on it. And rupa vantangva attana, self as possessed of material form. So we simply say, okay, my body is not well, or my leg has a trouble, my tummy has a trouble. I have a so it's a different ways of relationing or different ways of belonging, possessing the body, and we put it in that sense where rather than immediately recognizing this body as self, we simply say my head is aching, my body is aching, my eye has a pain, my neck has a pain. Now pain actually goes to the next level, that is the Vedana, the feelings aggregate. There are also actually these four different kinds of Sakkaya Ditti is possible. Now we are talking about the form aggregate. Similarly, you can think about the feelings aggregate, perceptions aggregate, and then the formations aggregate, and about the what we call the consciousness aggregate as well. So as we are moving forward, we'll take certain examples to represent these things to explain more. But as a beginning, so we can see that we can relate with the body in many different forms. The very first one is the immediate identification of the body. The second one, considering that body belongs to me, so therefore I have this sort of different thoughts. The kind of a belongingness is there. And then attaniva rupang, so self is something very large. In that self there is body. So self consists of so many things, but body is part of it. On the other hand, body is something large. Inside the body, somewhere there is self. There is an ongoing eternal self which might not be even die after the death, and this eternal existing everlasting self is somewhere hidden inside the body. So these are different ways that one can think of particularly the self, and he has a view that there is a self. That's a notion. He has an acceptance. Okay, there is a self. So the very first one talking about, okay, this body is the self. So immediate identification. Second one is that the self belongs to the body. And third one is telling inside self body exists. The fourth one is telling inside body, the self exists. Now, unknowingly, we are talking like this. Unknowingly, we are referring like this. Our whole society encourages this way of talking. And we are learning how to talk, to write, to communicate. And all that way of communication, without much of our knowledge, ultimately, slowly, slowly, strengthen this Sakkaya Ditti. So that's the problem, because say for example we as human beings, okay, we have to have a name. So everybody has a unique name. As much as possible, it's a unique name. If it is not unique, okay, you are given a unique identification number. In Sri Lanka we have national identity card number, and maybe in the US you may have the social security number. And maybe at other countries also, similarly, they have their unique number. If we are going from country to country, okay, we have a unique passport number. So likewise, so we are giving some sort of a unique nature. So there, everybody is telling, okay, you are a unique person, you are an individual, you are a separate person, you have your identity. And okay, this is your education, this is your nationality, and this is your race, this is your clan, this is your mother, this is your father, this is your children, this is your husband, this is your wife, this is your job, these are your rights. And all those actually helps to generate a self. All that, those actually helps to strongly represent as an individual. So this individuality is something that from the beginning of our life, that the whole society is promoting. Our parents are promoting it, our teachers are promoting it, maybe our friends are promoting it, and as we are moving forward, our education is promoting it, whatever the titles given is promoting it, maybe the relationships that we have, that is also promoting it, and when you get a degree, that is also promoting this self-view. Once you have an occupation, that is also promoting. Okay, you have given a particular title, you are assigned a certain task, so that is helping to promote the self-view. So all that, actually, however we are moving forward in the world, it is supporting this self-view. Now, therefore, Buddha mentioned in this Rupang, similarly as the Rupang Attato Samanupassati, he is simply saying Vedanang Attato Samanupassati. Vedanavantangva Attanam. So likewise, he elaborates to other five aggregates as well. So now, what is the outcome? So Anicchang Rupa, Anicchang Rupanti, Yathabhutan Nappujanati. Now, he don't have time to investigate the body. Like practitioners who are having some mindfulness, concentration, balanced effort. Now they are putting it to various bodily phenomena, material form, and trying to understand their true nature. So that kind of an exercise is not practiced by this uninstructed worlding. So he is basically don't know about the impermanence of this body, impermanence of the material form. Now, here I am referring the body just for easy explanation, but it is not limited to the body. So when we are talking about the material form, it's a huge area. It's a vast area that Buddha includes there in. So the body is one important part of it. That is what more closer to us. But all the external material form are also within this category, within this aggregate. Whatever the past form aggregates which were existed are all included in this aggregate. Whatever the future material form going to be existed, that is also included. Whatever very close material form available, that is also included. Whatever far material form included, now say something available in the very far, in another country, in another galaxy, that is also included. Whatever you consider as very superior type of material form, that is included. Whatever you considered as inferior material form, that is also included. So likewise, there are 11 dimensions that Buddha includes, so that we can say all different kinds of material forms are included in the form aggregate. Similarly, he explains to the feelings aggregate. Whatever the feelings that we can feel, I can feel as an individual, what are the feelings currently I am going through, that is included. Past feelings, that is included. Future feelings, that is included. Whatever superior, say very pleasant kind of, whatever the way that you define, that is included. Whatever inferior, painful, that is also included. And whatever the feelings that presently at this location we are going through, that is included. At far away someone is going through, that is also included. So likewise, this net is spreaded all around. So the all different forms of feelings are included. Likewise, you can think of the perceptions, formations and the consciousness. So it's a vast area that Buddha has included in these five aggregates. So therefore, we can say all the conditioned phenomena are included or divided into these five aggregates, these five categories. So outside the five aggregates, there is nothing conditioned. So all the conditioned phenomena are inside or included in these five aggregates. So if you are talking about something outside five aggregates, it could be only the Nibbana, the unconditioned. So all the conditioned phenomena are divided into five aggregates, and that is what we are talking now. But the uninstructed worlding doesn't have any thorough understanding about the five aggregates. So even though we as practitioners, to some extent, we know that these five aggregates are impermanent, but this person is not aware they are impermanence. He don't know the impermanence of the body. He don't have thorough understanding about it. Similarly, he don't know much about the impermanence of the feelings, perceptions, formations and consciousness. So anicchang rupang anicchang rupanti yatha bhutang nappajanam. He does not understand as it really is, impermanent form as impermanent form. Similarly, Buddha elaborates impermanent feelings as impermanent feeling, impermanent perceptions as impermanent perceptions, impermanent volitional formations as impermanent volitional formations, and impermanent consciousness as impermanent consciousness. So he has no idea about the impermanence at all. Then dukkhang rupanti yatha bhutan appajanati. So when impermanence is there, transience is there, so these aggregates can't remain as it is. They are every time under the oppression of this impermanence. So therefore it is suffering, unsatisfactory. But this fellow don't have any idea about the suffering, imperfection or unsatisfaction. Rather, he expect every time kind of a satisfaction, happiness from these five aggregates. He don't have much idea about the suffering nature of these five aggregates. Similarly, Buddha mentioned anattang rupang anattang rupanti adhabhutan nappajanati. He does not understand as it really is selfless form as selfless form. The form has no self. The form has no eternal ongoing self. But he has no idea about it, and he simply considers this body is myself. I am here, I am talking, I am sitting, I am walking, I am working, I am sleeping. So all that represent the bodily activities, but immediately I am referring those bodily activities as myself. So the self view is strongly ingrained in their mind. So if someone is telling, okay, there is no self in the body, so it's difficult to understand. Now, sankatang rupanti yathabhutan nappajanati, does not understand as it really is conditioned form as conditioned form. So the conditioned form, so as one is practicing, say for example, dhatu manasikara, so one particular insight that he may go through actually is the sankata nature of the five aggregates. Say for example, if you are going through Vedananupassana. So the Vedananupassana helps us to understand different feelings. So those different feelings, as we are recognizing, probably the three characteristics are something that one can understand as one continues one's practice. So now, actually this is included even before the common characteristics. If you refer the book compiled by Sayadaw Upandita, so there's a interesting book called Paving the Way. So that is the book usually given by the organizers as we are going to Panditarama in Myanmar. Venerable Sayadaw Pandita, he comes up with a kind of an order how the practice may growing, and he is referring particularly the Dhatu Manasikara, the elements meditation. And the first one is where he simply says, okay, you get some sort of an idea about the walking body. Now say we are talking about the walking practice, mindful walking. In mindful walking, as we are continuing, previously there is I am here, I am walking, I am at this particular place. Now the time is say 9 AM, I am at Nisarnavanaya, I am so and so, others are also here. Okay, now it's little cold, and all sorts of different kinds of perceptions are there in the mind, and with that I am walking. So this is a kind of a perception we may have. And while we are walking, and you get a lot of thoughts, what has happened in the past and maybe going to happen in the future, currently what is going on, so much of thoughts are there. Now as we continue the practice, so all that unnecessary burden will be reduced, and your perception would be simplified simply to, okay, this body is walking, there's a body movements is going on, okay, this is how I feels like. That's a bodily movement. The moving body is something that you can now fairly perceive instead of various other unnecessary information. So kind of a simplification is there. Sometimes we call as the sort of simplification, simplified view of this walking body. And next stage is where you are paying fair attention to below knees or maybe the soles. At that time, the fair amount of movement is something that you are recognizing. As a result of that, probably you now interpret, okay, it is very much like rowing a boat, very much like riding a bicycle, or very much like a robot. So there, further, rather than considering the whole body, now your attention is fairly concentrated, limited to the moving legs. So your perception has further simplified. All unnecessary additional things are abandoned, and instead you simply have the moving legs, and that you are representing, that you are perceiving like, okay, it's very much like rowing a boat, very much like riding a bicycle. So likewise, you start representing. And afterwards only you may get a very close analysis of the, elements. There you may understand, okay, hardness is there, softness is there, heaviness is there, lightness is there, roughness is there, smoothness is there, vibrations, movements are there, heat and coldness is there. So likewise, the very fundamental characteristics is the next level. But it is called as the individual character, or rather, yeah, individual characteristics of the elements, private characteristics, pachatta lakkhana. So that is the third stage, third step that one may come across. And so Sadhu Pandita mentioned, okay, this is the kind of an order that you are going through. So you first come across this sort of private characteristics. You are recognizing the private characteristics of the earth element. You are recognizing private characteristics of water element. Water element probably you recognize as kind of a cohesion or fluidity, kind of flowing nature. So that is characteristics of the water element. And the heat element, different forms of temperature, ups and downs of temperature, is the manifestation of the heat element. And then air element, various movements are there, vibrations are there throughout the body. So that represents the air element. Okay, so now only you understood these individual characteristics, private characteristics of the elements. Now, the interesting thing is, now all that unnecessary information, okay, your name and your age, whether you are beautiful, whether you are ugly, whether your education, where you are coming from, what is your nationality, your race, your education, none of those are available in the mind. Right now, what you know exactly right now is mere element characteristics. Now, this is how the simplification process happens. And not only simplification, now actually we are emphasizing the element's characteristics. So the mind has fairly concentrated. Then only you are able to understand very, very precisely these individual characteristics. Now, Sayadaw Pandit mentioned, okay, next stage is the Sankata Lakkhana. So here Buddha mentioned sankatang rupan ti yatha bhuta nappajana. So previously, before our practice, we don't know much about the sankata lakkhana, conditioned characteristics, sometimes called as the momentary characteristics. Now, as you are closely observing, investigating these elements, then you may understand, okay, what are these momentary characteristics. You may see, okay, hardness is not something existing forever. Hardness is something quickly arising and going through very quick change, and ultimately it disappears. Say heat is not something existing for a long time. Rather, there's a quick arising of heat and existing for a short time and ultimately disappear. Similarly, fluidity. So kind of a flowing nature is there. So it may start to appear and then it is changing and ultimately disappear. Vibrations, movements are same. So they have the nature to arise and continuously change, and ultimately at one point they cease to exist, pass away. So these are called the three momentary characteristics or three sankata lakkhana. They are common, they are available in all conditioned phenomena. Sankatani sankata lakkhanani. Tinimani bhikkhave sankatani sankata lakkhanani katamani tini. Uppado panyayati vayo panyayati sitassa anyatattam panyayati. So Buddha explains in the Sankata Lakkhana Sutta. So there are three characteristics of all the conditioned phenomena. So what are they? It is possible to recognize arising, the appearance. It is possible to recognize the disappearance or dissolution. And in between, change. There is no time to rest. Continuous change. Now, Sankatang rupang yathabhutan nappajana. Now, the typical worldly person, uninstructed person, doesn't have a practical understanding about this phenomena. He hasn't done any kind of an investigation. Now, these are not merely theory that Buddha is referring here. Rather, he has to have a fair amount of mindfulness, has to have a fair amount of concentration, and now he has to balance the effort, and that mind is now kept on certain different kind of phenomena, maybe bodily phenomena. And as he is continuing his investigation, at one level he may be thoroughly understanding this principle. That is where he can say, okay, now I understand what Buddha has meant from this formula. But as now Buddha is explaining, the typical people don't have this sort of an understanding. And previously we were discussing the common characteristics. So that is the next stage. So that as one is continuing the observation, investigation, they may understand how impermanent all this, how unsatisfactory all this, and where should I have any governance, or where should I have any control. All are changing, all are rising, all are passing away. I have very little influence. So this is how he may get into the common characteristics, Samanya Lakkhana. Now Buddha in this sutta refers those four characteristics, three common characteristics and the Sankata Lakkhana, the momentary characteristic. And then further he mentioned, Rupang Vibhavissatiti Yathabhutan Nappajanati. He does not understand as it really is, form will be exterminated, form will be, say, destroyed. So whatever reason form, it quickly disappears, without a remainder. Since we haven't seen it, if someone haven't done the experiment, he don't know it. Probably he have heard it, but it's a mere belief, simply superficial. But as one is carefully observing, then only he may understand, okay, they are not existing for a long time. They are quite momentary, very transient. So the opposite is now mentioned about the instructed disciple, noble disciple. So once he understood thoroughly, he does not regard form as self. He does not regard self as possessed of material form. Does not regard material form as in self, does not regard self as in material form. So the opposite is now referred here. Previously we were talking about how an uninstructed person regard the form as self, but here the instructed person, the practitioner who has going through a fair amount of vipassana, he does not regard form as self. He may use the typical language, by the way. One can say, okay, I went there, I went here, I am hungry. All that he can refer, but with some thorough internal understanding. He knows it is a mere way of communication, but there is no self in the body, or there is no self immediately identified within the body. The self has kind of relationship with the form. So any kind of that self-view is something that we prepared, something that we created. So that is something he slowly understand. Where this self-view is arising? With respect to body, where the self-view is arising? Say for example, you have a group photo. and your mind is somewhat calm before you see that group photo. You didn't have any sense of I, but immediately you saw the group photo, and probably you had an interest. Okay, where I was during that time. Now you are searching your face and your figure in the photo. Oh, now you have recognized it. Oh, I am there. Now a certain amount of sense of I could be highlighted. Previously there was no much of presence of I, the presence of sense of I, but now there was a little interest about finding where you are in that group, and now you found it, and immediately you get a fair amount of sense of I. You are happy, you are delighted, okay, I am there, and you can remember the event and how you enjoyed the event or what are the incidents around that event, all that happened, and your contribution to the event now happens. Now come to the mind, and how appreciated your maybe presence or your contribution, how others have made, that is also coming. Now you are promoting yourself. Slowly we are promoting yourself here. Previously there was no such thing. You are in a very calm, relaxed, peaceful mindset, but now all of a sudden this group photo has caused to arouse different kinds of self-view, different kinds of views which are promoting a self, indicating, okay, you are there, you are the important character there, you are the one who organized it, you are the one done it properly, others have praised you, others understood your presence, others understood your important participation. So whatever the way, different forms of thoughts may arise, and telling you, okay, you are so and so, you are an individual, you are very important, without you they can't exist, you are the one done it properly. So whatever the way, it is promoting a self. Now the instructed person is trying to avoid this. If it is happening, he recognize it, and he is trying to abandon it, not promoting it. He understand, okay, again now the mind is trying to delude me, the mind is trying to trick me, Mara is trying to trick me. So he slowly recognized these illusory kind of thoughts, deluding thoughts, and he is trying to abandon them. The same thing applies for feelings, same thing applies for perceptions, same thing applies for formations and the consciousness. Now Buddha talks about the opposite. That is, so aniccang rupanti yathabhutam pajanati. No, now he knows, okay, this form is impermanent, this form is suffering, this form is non-self, and this form is sankata, that is the quite momentary, and it is possible to exterminate this form. That means this form, it is not lasting for a long time, even momentary it is dying. At the death, this form will disappear. It will completely disintegrate. It will be sort of absorbed to the earth. So there's a possibility that the form aggregate will terminate. Even momentarily, it is terminating. It is not that we have to wait till the death. Each and every moment, this form aggregate is rising and passing away. So he has seen it. He has understood it. So the instructed person, the practitioner, has completely a different view now. He know, okay, what is the nature of the body. He know what is the nature of the form aggregate. He know what is the nature of the feelings aggregate. He know what is the nature of the perceptions aggregate. Various perceptions are there. Say you have a perception about someone, or you have simply a sign of something in the mind. It is appearing. But if you are not promoting it, it will disappear. It will wiped out from the mind. It may appear in the mind. We are the ones promoting it. That's why it is lasting for some time. Actually, it is not the same thing lasting. It may change into some other forms. Many other signs may support. They are coming up. They are popping up. So that is how we are feeding certain signs in the mind. Various marks, stains appear in the mind. But if we are able to recognize them merely as signs, they don't have enough energy or strength to last long time. They are quite transient. They will simply disappear. So when you start recognizing the mind, so more and more you investigate the mind, so you understand how these thoughts are quite fleeting, how these perceptions are quite fleeting. And even when you are using your senses, how to recognize this and that, how that recognition is so fleeting. So all that actually happening only when one is continuing the practice. Now, so there, Buddha now coming to the concluding remark. So rupassa vibhava, vedanaya vibhava, sanya vibhava, sankharanam vibhava, vinyanasa vibhava, evanko bhikkhu. Nochasang nochamesya na bhavis na me bhavisatiti evam adimuchamano bhikkhu chindaya oram bhagyani sangyojanani iti. So now Buddha concludes with the extermination of form, feeling, perception, volitional formations and consciousness, that bhikkhu resolving thus, it might not be for me, it will not be, and it will not be for me, can cut off the lower fetters. Now this is the conclusion. So Buddha say, okay, you understood thoroughly about the five aggregates, their nature, how they are, how much they are transient, how much they are impermanent, there is no self inside, they are utterly suffering. Okay, there is a possibility to completely dissolve them. You know, it's not a must to continue with these five aggregates. They are not completely in control, or rather we can say they are not completely in possess of ourself. So you have a possibility of abandoning them. Rather than accumulating the five aggregates, now you can dissolve them. One can completely dissolve the five aggregates. You are not clinging to them. So if we clinging to them, if we are grasping them only, they start growing. Now, once we stop grasping, they start slowly dissolving. They start slowly fading away. Now, you don't get much perceptions about the body. You don't get much perceptions about the, say, feelings. You're not talking about how you are going to have some pleasant experience in the future, maybe what had happened yesterday, the kind of pleasant experience you had yesterday. So, you are not ruminating about those things. Because what has happened yesterday is happened. Okay, keep the mind quiet right now. What's going to happen tomorrow may happen tomorrow. Okay, keep the mind quiet right now. So don't accumulate aggregates. So basically the idea is, now as much as possible you are giving a rest to the mind without proliferating on the aggregates. Either in the past, either in the future. So you are not promoting aggregates. You are not thinking about aggregates. In the form of the body, in the form of feelings, in the form of perceptions, say various activities, bodily activities, verbal activities, or thoughts, or sense experiences. So whatever happened past, okay, it has happened. Whatever going to happen in the future, okay, let it happen. But present moment, you are keeping the mind quite unoccupied. Quite released, very, very open. No thoughts much about the past aggregates, no thoughts about the future aggregates. So basically, helping one to understand, okay, there's a possibility to dispel all the aggregates, to dissolve all the aggregates. So if one is having this sort of encouragement, it might not be, and it might not be for me. So, with respect to the past, okay, all the past aggregates are now not coming to you. So, they have gone. And it will not be, and it will not be for me. That means, in the future also, with respect to the future aggregates, okay, no kind of much talking going on in your mind. You're not imagining about the future existence, you're not imagining about future experiences, future incidents going to happen. You are not welcoming them. You are not exaggerating them. So now you have this phrase encouraging you to have that mentality. So don't think much about the past aggregates, past events that you have gone through. Don't think too much about the future events going to happen, but keep the mind as much as possible in the present moment, but in the present moment also not grasping the present aggregates. Whatever currently existing, those aggregates are also not grasped. So this is the kind of a motivation Buddha is giving here. Okay, we'll see what else is there in the next part of this sutta, maybe next week. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta reaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions. Priyanka, I can't hear you, by the way.
Can you hear now, Bande?
Ah, yes, now can.
Thank you, Bande. Geshan. Geshan, you can ask question.
Guru Charanai, Swami Nuanta, I hope you can hear.
Yes, yes.
Great. So, from the today's talk, one of the things that I thought of bringing up as what you mentioned about the Sakkaya Ditti and how we sort of communicate and sometimes the person calls I have a problem or I have my stomach is aching or I have a bodily pain, so we communicate in such way without giving much of a reference.
Correct.
Is it because to a certain extent that how we have been taught back in the school environment or from home itself, how others have been communicating, is there a component has gone into the communication as such that we don't be very specific? Even now when I talk about it as well, there are certain things I see in my communication, there are certain flaws as well. But I'm trying to explain in a way, is it because of the way that our system has been, maybe the education system, maybe where you were brought up and etc. And that has influenced you to explain certain things in that manner rather than the way how this teaching sort of talks about. Is that a contribution factor?
Definitely.
As well?
Yes, yes, definitely. So our culture, our education, our social systems, our whatever laws, regulations, all are designed accepting there is an individual. And you are a separate individual and all others are individuals. And all together we come to a maybe family, as a society, etc. So this individualism is something accepted by the social norms. And the language is prepared in order to communicate among the individuals. Okay, I am here. When you are talking about yourself, okay, myself is here. And in front of me is you. And whoever far away is, that is she or he. So this is how the grammar is very much like rooted. And it's common to all the languages. Sinhala, English, Pali, whatever. So the language is prepared like that. Okay, the present, the tenses are also there, past tense, present tense, future tense. And the currently, when we are referring myself, okay, I am here, you are listening, and they are not listening. So likewise, this is how the language is prepared, this is how we are being taught, and this is how we are referring, we are using the language to communicate. Actually, without that, it is difficult to communicate. So we have to use it. So the question actually is how the Arahant would communicate. So that is also asked from the Buddha. So one celestial being, he has noticed, okay, arahants are also using the language. He's also telling, kīnāsavo antima jāti, ahaṁ vadāmi tipi so vadeya, mamaṁ vadanti tipi so vadeya, loke samanya kusalo viditva, vohara mattena so vohareya. Kīnāsavo antima deha dhāri. So he is a kīnāsrava. So he is the person that who has completely abandoned the influxes. Antima deha dhāri. So he is going through this body for the last time. There is no rebirth for him. Ahaṁ vadāmi tipi so vadeya. So he is telling, okay, I have mentioned this. So he is using the term I. Mamaṁ vadanti tipi so vadeya. Someone has told me like this. So he is using the term me. So these are the worldly terms. So the people, the worldly beings, say the uninstructed people are using these terms, and arahant is also using it. So this deity is asking from the Buddha, is there any personality view in him? Is there any kind of a conceit in him when he is using these terms? Because he is using the same language as the typical worldly people. And then Buddha say, no, he is using the terms, he is using the language, he is using the vocabulary, he is using the grammar, then only others can understand. Then only he can properly communicate with others. And he know the skills, or he know the limitations of the language. Loke samanya kusalo viditta. So in this whole world, there is a convention, there is a way of communication. There are different languages, there are different grammar, in order to properly use it without generating any kind of ambiguity. So he respect that. He understand that common sense. He has that common sense. He know the language. So he is referring it. He is using it without any trouble. But he know it is a limit. There are limitations. Whatever the language talking, telling, emphasizing the existing self, he know that there is no such self. Whenever he is referring someone in front of him as a self, as you, as so and so, he know there is no intrinsically a person inside. He's talking only to five aggregates. But in order to uniquely recognize these five aggregates, okay, I am giving a name. Here also there are five aggregates. In order to recognize that, I am referring a term as I, myself. But intrinsically, there is no such existing eternal self. So he understood that thoroughly. Loke samanya kusalo viditta vohara mattena so vohareya. And Buddha emphasized, okay, he's merely using all these terms, languages, merely as a communication, merely as a vohara, as a way of communicate among others, among the crowd. So therefore, I mean, there is no hindrance, or there is no obstacle to use these languages and all that. But we need to remember not to get lost, totally get involved, or totally get sucked in it. So the vipassana help us to come out and look at it and understand its limitations, so that we know, okay, this is a mere tool. This is merely a tool. But nothing intrinsically. I mean, what, even though the language emphasizes there is an individual or there is a self, but that is a mere communication method. That's it. So that understanding you always have to keep in mind as much as possible, because the problem is, as we are using the language, as we are socializing with others, often we forget the truth. Often we forget the truth. And we being carried away by the language. We being carried away by the convention. That is where we have to be careful. When do I carried away? Where did I take the language as so serious, so important, so truth, rather than using it as a mere tool? So those are the things that actually we need to little bit understand through this discussion.
Excellent. So I think you also mentioned just now to be very cautious of during the communication as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you be able to explain that bit further? Why so? Because is it because that that itself creates an I? Is that the reason, or is there something something that is hidden that I don't see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically now, say for example, we did something. You say you participated in an event, and you contributed a lot for the success of that event. You are the organizer, and you invited the, say, distinguished guests, and you worked hard in order to make it success, and ultimately assume that everything was done very smoothly, very beautifully. At the end of the event, everybody came to you and they praised you. Okay, so and so, you have done a marvelous job, and chief guests were quite happy, and the participants were quite happy. They all enjoyed the event, and you are great, and next event also you can do so and so. So they encourage you, and okay, now the event is finished. Now you came back home. So after coming back home, so can you keep the mind quiet? Or are there many thoughts explaining, elaborating about the past event? How you organized it, how you sometimes make mistakes, how you somehow overcome them, what were the obstacles, how you did that properly, and how others came and sort of praised you, how they request you to do the next event, how they expect you to take the sort of the, say, the upper hand. So that there's an emphasis on you. Now, when all these thoughts are again and again popping up in the mind, so there's a great influence emphasizing, yes, there is a self. There is I. I am the important role. I have played the important role. So without me, I mean, this event would be utter failure. So I am the one who made it success. So I am very important. So slowly, slowly, these thoughts are tricking us again to highlight a self. Previously, it's a very first thought, second thought. It's a very, you know, diluted, very subtle kind of a memory. But once we start promoting it, it may come to the surface. It may overwhelm the mind, and it will slowly, you know, emphasize the existing self. So that is the sort of say danger in the language. So merely using it to communicate is fine, but when we are overusing it, when we are over emphasizing it, when we are, say, using it again and again for many, many times with respect to past events, with respect to future events, all that actually emphasize or promotes a self. That's the problem. So that's where we have to be fairly careful. So how are we going to avoid that? So with respect to past events, so why are we all thinking on those past events? So is there any now, if there is any kind of advantage, okay, I have to refer a little bit about that past events, I have to learn something from that, okay, I have to write down the mistake so that it may not happen in the future, fine, there's an advantage. But other than that, if it is, I am just, you know, ruminating about it and promoting myself, I am having a slight smile, I am being proud about it, I am developing certain amount of conceit out of that. So that means we have gone wrong. We have gone beyond limits. So that is the area we have to be particularly careful.
Understood very clearly. Thank you so much, Bhante. I think in the past it has happened as well, and but I understand what you're saying, and so one of the things that I try to govern myself in this communication.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm getting an echo.
Okay, now.
So, I'll stop there because I'm getting an echo. Okay. And I think I understand very well because in the past that I have done that, which I sort of think about it as well. This was maybe several years ago, and how myself was and what I do now. I try not to, but as you said, there are certain things that from certain experiences, the mistakes, and I try not to do it again and again. So you learn from certain mistakes, but just don't want to go and talk about it. Or if there are great things you have done, don't want to talk about it, you know, it's just, so yeah, it's very clear. Thank you so much, Bhante.
Yeah, Thiruvan Saranai.
Thiruvan Saranai.
Yeah.
Radhika, you can talk now.
Thank you. Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes, can.
I have two questions.
Yeah.
The first question is, I asked you a few weeks back the difference between Keto Vimukti and Panya Vimukti, and you asked me to listen, you gave me a link and asked me to listen to a sutra.
Uh-huh.
I did. That sutra was very good. It was hard for me because it was in Sinhalese, so it took a long time. But I have a much better understanding that Keto Vimukti is really from Samatha meditation. You go to these four immeasurable, like for metta and the nothingness and the emptiness, and then from there, you have to move to vipassana to get the seven factors of awakening developed, and go to the unprovocable awareness release.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very clear, and it was really good. And then the magga is the Cheto Vimukti, and the pala is when you're arahant. But how does it work for the three stages of Sotapanna, Sakadagami and Anagami? Is there a lower level of Cheto Vimukti and Panya Vimukti for Sotapanna?
Mm-hmm.
Or how is it that you come to something else, some other level?
Mm-hmm.
Because for they say Sotapanna also, Magga and then Sotapanna Pala.
Mm.
And then they say the same for Sakadagami. So how would you know the sutra, and even the Godatta Sutra, I read that because you had referred to it. That also explains only the one for arahant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how, yeah. Can you please tell me what it is for a Sotapanna or a Sakadagami?
Yeah, actually two forms of arahants are explained in the Dhamma. What is the Panyayamutti and the Upado Bhaga Vimutta. So Panyayamutta is the one who completely liberated through wisdom. Upado Bhaga Vimutta is the one who has not only Panyayamutta, plus he has Samatha attainments also. So that's why he has both Samatha and Vipassana. So he is the Upado Bhaga Vimutta. Now Panyayamutta term is only referred for the arahants. But I haven't seen it being used for the Sotapanna, Sakadagamis or Anagamis. So the Panyayamutta term is usually referred to the arahants. But on the other hand, for the Seka Pungalas, Seka, you know, what's that, trainees, there are other terms used. Instead of Panyayamutta, sometimes it is called Dittipatta. Dittipatta is one term used for a stream winner or maybe a Sakadagami, Anagami, commonly for other Seka Puggalas, a term Dittipatta is used, where they have come to a thorough understanding about the Dhamma, they have realized the Dhamma to some extent. And certain other categories called the Saddhayamutta. Saddhayamutta is where they are also trainees, they are also what you call the Seka Puggalas. But their emphasis, their strong faculties, the faith. Previously in the Dittipatta, the strong faculty is the wisdom. Here in the Saddhavimutta, the strong factor is the faith. So that those two terms, say Saddhavimutta and Panya, sorry, the Dittipatta are used, not the Panyavimutta being used for the Seka Puggalas.
So how would you then distinguish between the Sotapanna Pala and the Magga?
So that's difficult. I mean, that's a thing. So one may be continuing one's path, and slowly one may achieve the pala. And so at what point it has happened? So that is something, I mean, difficult to recognize even. I don't know. I mean there are different kinds of views about them. Certain teachers say, okay, once you simply understood the, you know, that the certain defilements are not there, okay, you can say that you are a Sotapanna, you have attained the Sotapanna Phala. But on the other hand, certain suttas like Kosambya Sutta, where Buddha comes up with a kind of a criterion, there are six reflections are there. So you need to do those reflections often, and then only you can thoroughly, or can without a mistake, you can say with some assurance that you have achieved it. So those reflections are not a sort of easy reflections, and without much conceit, with a proper understanding, you have to conduct those reflections. You need to apply those reflections to yourself, and need to do a kind of an evaluation. Say, for example, are there any defilements in the mind which can lead to any kind of a transgression, and which can has pop up in the mind, which I haven't noticed it. Are there any sort of such defilements? So this is a kind of a reflection that Buddha is asking us to do. So this is not just a one-time job. I mean, you need to have a such kind of a, you know, understanding. Are there any those sort kind of the defilements? Did I acted without much of mindfulness? Under the influence of certain defilement, did I act like that? Later on, I understood, okay, I came through all these various defilements, I have ignorantly acted, I have blamed someone, I have hit someone. So at that moment, I was not completely aware of it. What has happened, I am completely unaware. So that means I don't have that proper quality. So likewise, so the qualities that Buddha mentioned there on those six reflections are very, very, very interesting. And so that is the kind of a criteria Buddha has given us to, reflect. And then only you can safely decide, okay, I have achieved the Sotapanna Phala.
Right. What would the sutra
Kosambya Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you was, Jennifer very kindly told us that there is a retreat in English with Bhante at Bhante Gunaratna's monastery, but she didn't tell us whom to contact or whatever, who the contact person is and how to, if you want to. I wrote to that name she gave, but they didn't reply to me. So I contacted the monastery in case anyone else is interested. The date Jennifer gave was correct somewhere, I think 23rd of May to 3rd or something. I can't quite remember, but those dates, they are doing the Noble Eightfold Path, and it's under the name of Bhante Gunaratna, but they are not yet open for registration. They open only 1 month before the date.
Okay, I think that should be the retreat that referred, and actually it will be jointly conducted by Bhante Gunaratna and Bhante Dhammajiva.
Yes.
Even though they haven't mentioned Bhante Dhammajiva's name, certainly that is the retreat that Bhante Dhammajiva is also going to support with, and that is the retreat that you need to join with. And once it is open for registration, please continue that, because we have no much control about their registration process. So we need to adhere to their rules.
Yes. Yeah. So, Bhante, Is there any retreats in Sri Lanka that you are doing in English? Because I thought that the one in London, Ontario, was to be in English. They told me that it was going to be in English, and I registered for it. But now,
in Sri Lanka, in Sri Lanka, actually, Bhante Dhammajiva usually does not conduct in English. Instead, I am conducting at Kalalgoda in English medium every month. That is a 3-day retreat, and there will be another retreat in Perth in May, again in English medium.
Now the Perth one, can I do it in Zoom?
Yeah, they are going to help with, yes.
Who is the contact? Is it?
There is Percy Asaratna, he is the contact. I'll share that information. Percy's email address I'll give you. Yeah.
It's difficult. The flight is over 36 hours and very expensive. To go from this end of the to go for 5 days. But I just thought if they are going to be doing it. What are the days? May 8th, you said, right?
No. May 3rd to 9th.
Oh, May 3rd to 9th.
Yeah.
I want to see if the time is right. Sometimes the times don't also work out.
Yeah.
Australia and Vancouver. But I will check this Percy. If you have his contact information,
I'll put the
chat.
Chat, I'll put the chat.
Okay.
Yeah. I just put it to everyone, so you can contact through that.
Okay. So you will be doing only that 3-day English one. I might come in September, October.
Yeah,
That's why I'm asking.
Yes.
Are you doing a 10-day one like that, either like the Cheto Vimukti one, Manna Vimukti one, or like the English one that you did with with the... Duality, like reflection.
No, it is just 3 days.
Are you doing anything?
No, I mean, I can't still tell you. I mean, what would be going to happen in the future? So we'll see what we are going to do.
No, I just I'm just asking because if there is going to be one, I can try to come during.
Correct. Yes. I'll provide. Probably you can contact Dilhara Fernando, who is the one organizing that retreat. I'll put the name of that also. Yeah. I'll put her email address also. So please contact her. Okay. I'll put the information to the chat again.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, we can go to the next one. Yeah, third one, Sanai.
Mahesha, you can talk now.
Thank you, Avasarai Bhante.
Yeah.
And this is something about my practice, and then another general, like a kind of an issue. Probably, I would say that I faced, and then I like to share that what I thought I will continue to do with that. So, first of all, I think long time ago, like I said in this session, that to you, I don't feel like sitting like routine my sitting session in the morning now. I do some days, something or the other comes up, and then I mean, my mind says, okay, it's okay. Keep on doing your daily routine practice. So then, like day-to-day practice rather than worry about missing a sitting session. So I do sometimes during the daytime do concentrating on my walking when I'm doing walking for like, or exercise, or maybe walk into some work or things like that. And then during the daytime, when I'm doing the other work, except the really what we have to put the head in, normal routine daily work, housework and stuff, I keep on looking at the mind, like where it's running. So I see that it's going and running it, and I mean attaching it to a past event, and then try to elaborate on that. And then I look at it, okay, you run away, and then it comes back, and then again concentrate on my bodily movements. So it keeps on going like that. So that's the way how I keep on doing. And rather previously, I used a bit of like getting worried when I miss a session of sitting, but I'm not now. So mm-hmm. It's always comes in, oh, it doesn't matter. Keep on the daily practice, rather just specifically thinking of missing a sitting session or a proper programmed walking meditation. So that's how I go. And the issue was that I was trying to say is one of my family members and I had a little chat, and a complaint came saying that, you know, you're not accepting when we bring up a friend and introduce to you. You just keep like quiet and not tending to create a positive relationship. You just you're trying to ignore people. And then I asked why is said like that, and then they came up with two examples. Like one is a very past event, we went to a particular place and then they offered a meal, so we had a chat, and I can't remember how everything, what we talk and things, but the person now complaining me said, you were from the start to them, you were talking in English, and they picked it because it's in Sri Lanka, and they said, oh, why your mother talking in English the whole time? This is Sri Lanka, and she knows to speak in Sinhala, and actually I can't remember that actually it's happening that way. So then I said as an answer, I really can't understand. I can't really remember what was the conversations and what I talk and all those. And I said, oh, if it's really happened and if they got hurt because of my speaking in English, I mean, now I can't do much about it because it's past. And okay, I will think about it in the future when I'm doing something, especially about the language. And then said, oh, because of that, you know, they laugh about it. I said, of course, you know, I can't control other people laughing or doing or whatever because of unintentional thing that I did. I didn't do it to, you know, think it to show off or to hurt someone. It's beyond my control and it's past many, many years ago. And I don't think that I should take it. So anyway, I just answer like that. And then again, said, oh, the other incident, and we introduced another person to you, a few months ago, and we thought that you will do this and this and this, and you did. And I said, oh, really, if it's happened like that way, I have no idea why it happened, and I don't think that I did anything wrong, because maybe that's how I am. Then came the example, saying, oh, the other day your friend came, or someone you met in a retreat came over and you were talking very nicely and you were the usual person, we were watching you, we thought why talk to someone that like that, that's your friend, and then when we bring a friend, you don't behave in that same way. I said, actually, I have no idea what you all are talking about, but the things are happening that way, then I will think about it, what's up and why you people are getting hurt. And so that's the complaint that I got. So then after that, I actually told about this to my husband, who is like my life partner, and said, no, this is the complaint that I got, and do you think that I did something wrong? And he said, I don't know, I can't understand what's people think, what's the other person who made the complaint thinking, better try to adjust according to that way that they like you to behave.
Mm-hmm.
I actually elaborate on that, and I actually made the decision, no, I shouldn't be, you know, like changing myself, because I'm not doing them intentionally. Not that I don't want to make friends, not that I really like friends. Now, it's a neutral thing, like if someone talks, I talk. And if the topic is right, I talk. Otherwise, I just keep silent. And so that's the way. So I try to explain to, because it's a family member, I have to explain that. And they really said, oh, you must change, you know, you must change. Otherwise, it's really hard for our relationships and things like that.
So yeah, I think we can understand the situation. So sometimes, yes, I mean, we are not intentionally making someone worried or intentionally making any mistake, but still the way that we behave, sometimes others may not appreciate. They have their own way of interpretation, and of course we can't control their way of thinking, as you correctly mentioned. But if possible, it is our duty to, you know, at a particular place, if there is a particular way that we have to behave, if we can use our common sense so that we are properly behaving, so that others may not sort of get offended or feeling bad about us, something like that. But on the other hand, we should not go too much acting like something, and so completely artificially acting becomes real hindrance to us, and it will be a burden to us. And it's very difficult just to satisfy others, completely behave in a different way other than showing other than behave in the natural way. If we are trying to act, it will be a real burden to the mind, and we are simply behaving the way as usually, and that will be more convenient. But if we are trying to act simply just to satisfy others, then it will be a real artificial way of representing us. It will be another way of deluding others. That is all the thing. So anyway, as we are continuing the proper way of naturally behaving the way whoever we are, so slowly they will understand, okay, even though this person has behaved like this, he doesn't internally have that sort of a trait, rather he is simply continuing with that. I mean, there is no any particular way of hinting us or hurting us or something like that. So if you can remember, there are even arahants who has used certain harsh words, but there is no grudge or there is no hate inside their mind, but they have simply used that as a habit or something like that. So anyway, by the way, I have to stop the discussion here. We have little exceeded the time. I have to attend to some other activity as well. So I like to conclude the Dhamma discussion here today. And I hope we can conclude here. Mahisha, I think it will be okay.
Yeah, thank you, Bhante. Yeah, I got the answer here. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay, then thank you very much for all of your participation. And today also we have spent a fair amount of time discussing this Dhamma and participating in the Dhamma discussion and listening to Dhamma sermon. And whatever the merits that we have accumulated, we'll share with the celestial beings and with our past relatives and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavataca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavataca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavataca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasatthaca bummattha deva naga mahiddika puññantam anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu sāsanam. Ākāsaṭṭhā ca bummaṭṭhā devā nāgā mahiddikā puññantam anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu desanam. Ākāsaṭṭhā ca bummaṭṭhā devā nāgā mahiddikā puññantam anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu mam parang. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā huntu ñātayo. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā huntu ñātayo. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā huntu ñātayo. Iminā puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Sataṁ samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Iminā puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු